Skip the ramen noodles. Don't even think about a frozen pizza. It's time to find out where you'll enjoy some drinks and dinner tonight.
Arizona Guy Fieri here from Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives on the Food Network. I hope you'll be listening to On the Menu Live with the Madman, Matt Russell.
On KNST.
And what a glorious Saturday afternoon it is, fellow foodies. Thank you so much for tuning in to On the Menu Live as you do every Saturday at 4 o'clock right here on AM 790 KNST. And if you're listening to us on the radio station, thank you so much for tuning in. Perhaps you're listening to us live on our website, onthemenulive.com. Maybe you're one of the millions who streams worldwide on the iHeartRadio network. No matter how you are hearing my voice, I am so glad you're here. We're actually broadcasting live from the intergalactic headquarters of KNST, you know, because we miss Casey. You know, we only get to hear her voice every Saturday because we're usually broadcasting on location, but here we are putting our eyes on this lovely woman who gives the glue that holds this shoe together. Casey, how's it going?
Thank you, Matt. Very well. How are you?
That's good. Always nice to come back and just pay a visit to the mothership at KNST.
I love it when you are here in the studio, let me tell you.
And I wonder why.
Yeah.
Because we bring booze
yes,
to the
every
show.
Every time you come.
Well, you know, speaking of booze, I can't imagine a better segue, but here, returning for his probably 319th time as celebrity co-host for the full hour, founder and publisher of the Wine Inquirer, drumroll please, Jim Cedar is back. What's going on, brother?
So tell me, when does Captain Kirk make an appearance?
That's right. I know those are the hard questions.
You're the host. You're supposed to answer those.
I'd say after the tequila.
There you go.
Really. Right. Well, you know, it's been a while since we've had you on the show, and I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact, Jim Cedar, that you are always on the go and your palate is taking you around all the great places culinary and cocktail wise across Southern Arizona, but you've also been doing some international travel, and we're going to be finding out a little bit about that and what you brought back for us to enjoy. But anyway, wineinquirer.com. I love the fact that I think you, we were one of the first people to tell your story here in this community several years ago. And it seems like this website, this multimedia destination for the food and wine enthusiast, just keeps growing and growing. Give us an update on wineinquirer.com, Jim.
Well, I think, you know, one of the nice things we've done in the last 12 months or so is to expand it into the spirit world, so to speak, and not during Halloween. People drink lots of spirits, and we figured since we live in Southern Arizona, what better place to start than tequila?
Right on.
And so we established some great relationships with some of the premier tequila producers outside of Guadalajara in South Central Mexico. And then made our first visit down there in June and spent almost a full day at each of five different distilleries learning about what goes into this labor-intensive process, how they grade, how they rate their tequilas, and everything that goes on in between, from drinking it neat, as they say, which is sort of straight up,
right,
to cocktails, to pairing with food. And it's been an eye-opener for me because, like most Americans, I've been more used to tequila with margaritas. And I think that's how the majority of people drink it. Some people still drink it as shots, but I think that's slowly waning. But to learn about some of the progress that they've made, the precision that they have now in developing and crafting out these high-end tequilas, how just fantastically they blend in with fruit juices, vegetable juices, herbs, spices, etc., it's just been an eye-opener for me.
I think tequila has come such a long way, and there's been such a renaissance, as we've talked about on this show from time to time. Back in the days when I was in college, tequila sort of had a different feel, right? Back when, Cuervo Gold was sort of the top, shelf product. Now, and I love the fact that we are so close to, you know, the destination of tequila. I mean, we're right here. We're an hour from the border. And we just are able to get our hands on some of the world's best tequilas. And you walk into any one of these wonderful restaurants, you now have more than three choices for your tequila. I just love it.
Yeah, you do. You do. And as well, that there are a number of styles and lines that don't make it to the U.S. yet that are just beautiful, gorgeous, that they'll make it up here eventually. And probably, more than likely, some point later in the fall, over the winter, we're going to have some of these producers up into Southern Arizona.
Fantastic.
To do some tequila pairing dinners. We've sort of started discussions with a number of restaurants already. And I think it should be an eye-opening experience for everybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, quite literally, in fact. And we're actually going to be doing a little tequila tasting with you towards the end of the first half of this show. Right around 4:20, we're going to do a little tequila tasting with you to get a sense of the treats that your palate got to experience while you were down there. But now you went to, did you say five different tequila producers?
Yeah, we have five. And literally, we spent between 8 and 12 hours a day on each one. So our day started around 6 or 6:30 in the morning because we were based in Guadalajara. That's about an hour from tequila country. Actually, from one part of tequila country. There's another side. It's about an hour and a half away. So our days went from around 6 a.m. till sometimes 7 or 8 at night between the travel and so forth. Guadalajara, by the way, is a great city. It really should be a must-visit for anybody that wants to head into Mexico. It's the country's second-largest city. It's got about 6 million people.
Wow.
It's modern. It's high-tech. A big financial district. And right now, it's the place where you're best off to stay if you want to do a jump-off into tequila country. However, the good news is that in tequila country itself, they're developing some bed and breakfasts and some smaller hotels that should be ready to go within about a year or two. It will actually allow people who come into Guadalajara to go to tequila country, spend several days there, and use that as their sort of home base to jump off to a number of these other producers. And that'll, you know, knock down the time that it takes, some of the exhaustion and traveling back and forth. So it's a great idea.
Oh, I'm in.
And it's coming.
I'm in. So when you think about tequila country, the region that I keep seeing again and again is Jalisco. Am I saying that? Well,
yeah, no. Okay. Jalisco is one of the states.
Okay.
But within Jalisco, you've got a few main towns. One is the town of tequila itself, and there are several other ones. Amatitan is one, and there are a few others that really house the sort of core of the tequila distilleries and the tequila sort of fields or farms, if you will.
Now, did you meet the mayor of Tequila? Did you get a key to the city from the mayor of Tequila, Jim Cedar?
I'm not sure I would have remembered, Matt. You know what? I felt like I came back every day about 100 proof. You know, and by the next morning, you know, I could grab some coffee and say, okay, you know, as Ronald Reagan said, here we go again.
Here we go again.
And it really felt like it. But, you know, the most striking thing about the visits to all of them is the labor of love and the intensity that goes in, because the tequila starts by coming out of the base of the blue agave plant, which is a massive plant. I mean, we have agaves here. They're not blue agave. But you need to trim off all of these very sharp leaves, dig up the plant, which has very superficial roots. So that part's not so tough. But to get all of these what they call pencas, or sharp leaves, off of there, and then you're left with a pineapple-looking structure. The thing is that these pineapple structures weigh between 75 and 200 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
And with this very sharp instrument called a koa, they slice this thing in half. Then they have to lift these up, put them into a truck, and then when they come into the distillery and the ovens, they have to sort of offload them. This is a really tough job, and yet these thin workers, they're called jimadores.
Yes.
They can harvest these plants in 2 minutes flat.
Yeah, these are some of the hardest working people in the world.
Yeah, and I watched them do it. And then they gave me the koa, and I said, well, you know, maybe by the end of the day I can harvest one if I'm lucky. They do in 2 minutes one of these. And, in fact, one of the visits to one of the distilleries, we started off and with the interview in the field. There must have been about, I don't know, 12 or 15 jimadores out there. By the time we finished and we walked out, there had to be several hundred piñas sitting on the soil ready to go into trucks. These guys do it so smoothly. They also come from multi-generational families of jimadores. So, you know, you might have a line of great-grandfather, grandfather, father. Now the son's taking over. So they learn from their family.
And this is all by hand, too. No
yes.
multi-billion-dollar no, farm no. machinery.
Right.
This is a man and a shovel.
Right. This instrument called the koa has a long handle and a semicircular sharp blade at the end. The unknown unknown, I think, to a lot of people, this koa weighs about 13 to 15 pounds. Mm. It's not like one of these lightweight, feathery, I have a rake to rake my lawn. Okay,
right.
So, but here are these thin guys, you know, pushing on the plant, lifting it up, you know, cutting the piña in half. Really tough process, but that's what goes into the start of tequila.
Oh, well, we're not, you know, that's the start of tequila, and we're certainly not done with tequila, because we're going to be keeping this conversation going with Jim Cedar a little bit later on in the show. He's our celebrity co-host for the full hour here. I haven't even had any tequila, and I'm stumbling over my words. But here, thank you so much for listening to On the Menu Live. We're going to take a quick commercial break and thank a couple of sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to talk to a man who is redefining barware in all of the world. You don't want to miss this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
How's it going, Tucson? Jeff Morrow here from the Sandwich King on the Food Network. Thanks for listening to On the Menu Live with my buddy Matt Russell.
And welcome back to On the Menu Live. Matt Russell broadcasting deep in the heart of Happy Hour right here at KNST in the intergalactic headquarters of Clear Channel right here in Southern Arizona. So glad you're here. And I'm sitting by my tequila sophisticate and a celebrity co-host for the full hour from the Wine Inquirer. Jim Cedar is back with us.
Well, of course, this is a fun place today. Wine, tequila, duh.
Where do you go from there? Well, listen, from the what in the world will they think of next file, you know, Jim Cedar, you and I just love looking for opportunities to heighten our culinary and cocktail and wine experiences. And there's a company that I learned about a couple of years ago that I think is kind of redefining that space, that's really giving us the opportunity to take those wine and spirit experiences to the next level. And I thought we'd have, from Soiree Home, managing partner Andrew Lazorchak is with us. Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how's it going? Hey, glad to be on air with you.
Well, you know, we got wine here, we got tequila here, we got one of the great celebrated chefs, Ken Foy, here. I mean, how can things get any better, Andrew?
not much better than other me being there right there with you guys.
Well, you're here in spirit, as they say, no pun intended. But listen, you've got this new unbelievable product called the Tempor. And before we have you kind of break down exactly what this baby is and all the functions and features it brings to the wine and spirit experience, give us a little sense of what Soiree Home is all about.
Yeah, Soiree Home is a company I started kind of by accident. I used to be an architect, designed a wine aerator, brought me into the wine world, which, you know, easily gets mixed in with the spirits world. So we, you know, had the opportunity, and we had to also keep fulfilling all the retailers that loved our products and keep designing new stuff for them. So Soiree Home is a company I built that is, you know, we're focused on culinary experience, and that's not just drinks, it's also food, and that's what we're moving into as well. And we're paying attention to the growing movement of foodies, the millennial generation, people that love coffee, wine, spirits, anything from truffles to, you know, sea salts and everything beyond. We're looking at that. We're living in it. We're trying to innovate that space and kind of create these tools that help people experience, explore, and enjoy food and drink.
I like when you say innovate the experience, because Jim and I, you know, we have discovered that right when we both hit on an idea for how to make our wine or spirit experience that much better, it seems like Soiree Home is just a step ahead of us, and we learn about a new product. So when we're talking about you guys living on the edge, really setting the trend for you know, these kinds of experiences, our hats off to you, because you keep coming up with ideas that we think are going to make us $1 million, and you're the multimillionaire, so you can take credit for it. But anyway, let's talk about Tempor. I heard from your people not too long ago about this product, and let me just say they sent me a sample, and I just am having a blast playing with this thing. Give our listeners a sense of what this whole Tempor thing is all about. We're actually going to be doing a live demo right here in the studio as you talk, Andrew.
Awesome. All right, well, Tempor is the name came from the idea is moderating temperature. When it comes to wine and spirits as well, you know, all fluids, the viscosity and flavors is super, super important, and it's the temperature that is, you know, one thing that's often overlooked. We started off with an aerator for wine, but we wanted to expand that. One thing I personally feel is red wines are often served too warm. White wines, usually too cold coming out of the fridge. Tempor is a tool to basically moderate the temperature of a wine, which then controls the viscosity, the flavor profile, the way that the flavors and tastes come across your palate. That'll even affect aromatics. So we can really geek out in that space. But the simple part of what Tempor is think of a stainless steel rod that you put in your freezer, and it inserts into the bottle. And then we made it modular so that you can pull off the chiller part, but it always has a good, clean, modern pour spout, which we built in a sediment filter, which could be from any kind of an unfiltered spirit to, of course, wine, anything that you might want to just kind of keep either tartrates or of course, just residual sediment out of your drink. So we have a filter for the sediment, and then we have an aeration hole, and then we have a drip-free pour edge with a nice little stopper on top. So it's really just kind of a modern, high-tech way to serve your spirits. We designed it to fit into mostly any bottle. Designed for the wine enthusiast in mind, but you know, we have people that use it for vodka service, even tequilas with a slight chill, anything you'd want to put it in. Aperitifs, Lillet is making a real big push right now in the market, so aperitifs are something I think are about to come in. You know, it's really kind of having a renaissance with the whole mixology and cocktail movement, and this is just another tool to add to the tool chest to play with and bring to market.
Well, you say one thing to add to the tool chest. I mean, I think this is the tool chest, in one absolutely beautiful product. So you've got, you know, part bottle pourer, part chiller, part sediment filter, part aerator, all in this one. And let me just say, high quality construction, I think, is one of the things that defines exactly your space, because it's this, it's a very handsome accessory, and it's got some weight to it. So it's not one of these cheap plastic things that, you know, that that you can get, you know, anywhere at a local hardware store. I mean, this, there's quality to this, but it's priced at a level that is virtually, you know, approachable for anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we wanted to pay attention to. Again, going back to Soiree Home, one of the key principles of all of our products is materiality. Stainless steel is a material is found from wineries to distilleries to anywhere, and it's the nice thing is it's pure to flavor. And then we're talking about trying to keep something cold. That's the idea of temper. It moderates temperature. Stainless steel, you can't really think of, if you wanted to freeze anything and try to use it to cool it down, steel is probably the best material there could be. And stainless steel is known by chefs from cutting knives to surfaces for countertops. Stainless steel is the most pure, kind of safe material there is. So you don't have flavor retention, you won't have any tarnishing, any kind of rust or anything like that. And then, yeah, we made it a modular tool. So it's a system that no matter what you want to do to condition your beverage, however you want to serve it, you can do that, you know, according to what's needed. If it doesn't need to be chilled, you can pull off the chiller. If you want to aerate it, you can put in, you know, you can add our Soiree on top of it. But of course, the temper pour will just aerate gently as you pour anyway. So the nice thing is, whatever you need to do, we have the tools to help your beverage experience just be the best it can.
Hey, Andrew, Jim Cedar here. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing real well, thanks. For somebody who wants to get their hands on this wine tool, where do they access it?
One of the best places, of course, is our website. Nordstrom is a very close partner of ours.
My wife can buy some clothes there at the same time. Great. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
But we're there. They came to us and they said we have our anniversary sale. I think it's just about to end this weekend. So if you hustle up to the .com or your closest Nordstrom, that's a potential. But Soiree Home is a great place online to come learn about all of our products. We have some new exciting glassware that's coming out that, you know, we might be talking to you guys about soon in a couple months. So we have a lot of fun things. And again, we're very much focused on the foodie movement, the people who appreciate whether it be coffee, tea, wine, spirits. We're looking at how we can heighten all of those experiences. So check out SoireeHome.com, SoireeHome.com, and have a look through our stuff. And feel free to pick some stuff up. I'm sure everyone will love to play with them this fall.
Yeah, I mean, we're having a great time playing with this. Let's give a little report on our demo here. So one of the things, I mean, the chiller, literally, folks, it just snaps right on to the pourer effortlessly. If you don't want to use that chilling rod, you just snap that right off. If you're going to be using a red and you want to keep that at cellar temperature, that's beautiful. This pourer just literally fits right onto the pourer of the bottle. It looks like it's got several lines of gaskets, so no matter how big or small the opening the bottle is, goes right in. And I love the fact that you can literally almost invert the entire bottle of wine, and you're still getting a very slow and steady stream of wine coming out into the glass. So, folks, this is virtually spill-proof. It's regulated in a way, and I love the way that it's coming out a little bit more slowly than you'd expect, because that says that something's working.
That's exactly it. It's conditioning as you pour.
Conditioning as you pour.
Well, also, you know, Matt is so accustomed to spilling that having something like this in a bottle is absolutely perfect for his coordination.
That's right. And I'm almost thinking that it would be appropriate, Andrew Lazorchak, to perhaps snap off the top part, throw that in your briefcase or throw that in your pocketbook, and when you're out having a nice bottle of wine at a restaurant, I mean, you know, pull out the temper and tap the wine and all, and then you can take that great aerated experience right out on the town with you.
Absolutely. You know, that's the nice thing about it. All of our products are, you know, they're very friendly for traveling. For the gourmet on the go is one of my favorite taglines for the products we design. But yeah, that's exactly it. And it's all stainless steel. It's actually die-cast stainless steel. So you think of high-grade car machinery. You know, the tooling for it is amazing and beautiful. And, you know, we put a lot of time and research into making a very sturdy product that can go with you and go into any liquid without, you know, any concern whatsoever as far as performance, breakability, or flavor, any residual flavors.
Well, we certainly appreciate the fact, Andrew Lazorchik, that you have done all the heavy lifting, because all we have to do is enjoy the fruits of your labor, and enjoy we are. From Soiree Home, managing partner Andrew Lazorchik, thank you so much for everything you continue to do for the food and wine and culinary community, and we can't wait to have you back on the show to keep telling this fun story.
Yeah, no, likewise. Thank you, and thanks for everything you guys do for our, you know, our beloved community of people that love food and drink and all the enthusiasts out there. So I appreciate you having a home for all of us.
Rock on. Have a great weekend, Andrew.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Way to go. Oh, man, this is good stuff. I should say that we're actually enjoying a lovely Cottes Brook Sauvignon Blanc from the Marlboro region. You know, when it comes to Sauvignon Blanc, Jim Cedar, Marlboro is kind of where I like to go first.
Yeah, you know, those are crisp, clean, kind of almost like fresh-cut grass, gooseberry, just really steely pure, great wines.
Love that. I could just sit here and listen to you talk about wine for the rest of the night.
You've got a slow life, don't you?
Would Rosalie mind if I just borrowed you for the next couple of hours and have you speak poetically to me about the arbor?
As long as I can charge the hourly rate, not a problem.
So how do we segue from a lovely, crisp summer Sauvignon Blanc to what you have brought to share with us today?
Well, you know, actually, the first tequila is actually, it's almost an analogy to Sauvignon Blanc, because this is the El Jimador line. It's from Casa Herradura. It's their Blanco, and it's only aged about 45 days. But it's very, very clean. It's very smooth. It has a little bit of agave notes in there, a little bit of citrusy notes in there. And so kind of like a Sauvignon Blanc that is very kind of pure, doesn't see oak, you know, and is just steely clean. This is kind of similar to that. You're really getting the true, pure sort of nuances, if you will, of the base tequila that, once it goes into barrel for longer periods of time, as we were discussing, it produces the reposado, the añejo, the extra añejo.
And when they say reposado is not an aged tequila, reposado is Spanish for rest.
That's right.
So it's rested.
It's a rested tequila.
And then añejo, obviously, is aged
is,
a little longer.
Well, actually, literally in Spanish it means old, but in this case it's sort of aged.
I like aged better.
Yeah, I do too. You know, and then you go for the extra añejo, which is 3 years or beyond.
Oh, beautiful.
And they just kind of develop these really deep, beautiful, kind of golden brown sort of notes, something similar to what we have for the Selección Suprema here also.
Which is what we're going to get to next. Okay, right. So we're trying the silver, the Blanco, as they say. Now, is there a traditional tequila toast that you have brought back from the motherland?
Actually, there is, but the toast is going to be a little bit different. And that is that Ruben Aceves, who's the global managing ambassador, taught us when we were down there that when you toast, you must look the person in the eye.
Oh, all right. Well, there's four of us here.
Because if you don't, it means
it's offensive.
You're hiding something.
Oh, all right. Well, all four of my eyes are locked on. We've got Chef Ken Foy here. We have Casey at the board. We got Jim Cedar, myself. Salud.
Salud. Cheers to everybody. Enjoy, and here we go.
Oh, that's delightful. That is beautiful. Clean. It's and you can, you know what, you can taste sort of the almost like the vegetal quality of that agave right from, and it's so, I mean, it's so high quality. A lot of people unfortunately equate cheap with white,
well,
or
I think,
cheap,
you know,
with silver.
You know, Matt, historically, I think you have to go back, you know, decades, but they weren't nearly as precise, I think, in the way that they harvest the piña. If you don't get all the leaves off, if you leave a little bit extra down near the base, The juices that come out of there tend to be bitter, and they cause headaches. And I think that's what people who perhaps were tasting, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago have recollection. They have become much more precise. The regulations as to what defines 100% blue agave is very strict now. And you see these producers producing out some fantastic tequilas. And if you notice with this one, it's clean. There's some heat. But it's not an overwhelming heat.
Right.
It's not an overwhelming burning. It's not offensive.
But still very much a sipping tequila.
Absolutely.
Now, with this tequila, it certainly is a premium tequila. I would say that this would be appropriate to source for an authentic margarita with
Absolutely.
Just a little simple syrup, some fresh lime juice, and that's it. I don't think our next tasting is really on the margarita spectrum.
No. I think Casa Herradura would come up here and shoot you if you had a point. But the nice thing about this about the El Jimador, the Blanco, not just tequila, but you know, you can do it with mixed cocktails, and you can just think of any tropical fruits you want. You know, mangoes, papaya, other fruit juices, pear. You can just play around with endless combinations. And sooner or later, as I did, you're going to stumble across something and just it's going to stop you in your tracks and say, wow, I really discovered something great here. So I would really encourage people to play around with this.
Yeah, and that's where the fun comes in, is just playing around with it.
Absolutely.
And we're going to, on the other side of the news break, we're going to taste this this gorgeous nectar that you brought out of a beautiful box, and you're going to
tell... What makes you think there's going to be any left?
Tell the story there. But we do want to say there's one thing that you do not see anywhere near this tequila is a jar of salt and a lime, because I want to continue to reinforce the fact, fellow foodies, that you do not need a lime and a shaker of salt to maximize your tequila experience. This is a beautiful tequila. It doesn't need, and nor does it belong anywhere near salt
and in fact,
lime.
In Mexico, they'll tell you they don't do salt, they don't do lime, they don't do shots, they sip it. They know how to take this. It's not there for the alcohol. It's there for the enjoyment of picking up the nuance. So you're absolutely right on.
That's exactly right.
What a bright guy you are.
Anyway, we're going to continue enjoying this tequila and take a quick news break and thank a couple of sponsors. And when we come back, we're going over to Dante's Fire, the place you've been all hearing about, but we don't want you to miss that interview. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Spice up your Saturday night. He'll tell you where to have fun tonight. On the Menu with Matt Russell is on KNST.
And welcome back to On the Menu Live. It's Matt Russell broadcasting live from the gorgeous Clear Channel KNST AM 790 studios here with my celebrity co-host for the full hour, Senor Jim Cedar.
See?
You've made some friends here this afternoon, Jim.
Well, you know, I do my best. You know, if it takes a little extra, whatever it takes, you know, to kind of lube things, well, then that's what I do.
Well, speaking of extra, you brought a little extra for us to share, and I want to remind all of our fellow foodies that right after this final tequila tasting of the show, we're going to be sitting down and getting to know Chef Ken Foy of Dante's Fire Cocktails and Cuisine. And listen, one of you listening right now is going to have the opportunity to win a gift certificate to go experience Dante's Fire for yourself if you're the first person to call in and answer the right answer for the trivia question. Again, that's coming up just a little later on in the show. But we had that El Jimador, the Blanco, the Silver, the beginning of the journey of a tequila. Now you've sort of brought us, I guess, sort of the end of the journey. Tell us about this that you brought.
Well, this is, again, another Casa Herradura. This is their Selección Suprema. It's aged about, I think, 49 months in barrel.
Wow.
And you can take a look at it. I mean, the color is kind of almost kind of a light to moderate caramel color. It just has lushness and richness written all over it. And the nose, you know, I think really that the nose verifies that. I think it has great nuances. We were talking about it, of sort of brown sugar and caramel and vanilla. It just has a beautiful, beautiful sort of profile to it. But again, not to forget, this is really the Blanco that was aged for 49 months.
So these differences, the subtleties and the nuances of the flavors, when you're bringing in some of that honey, some of the nectar, some of that caramel, I'm even getting a little clove on the nose. It's the same spirit.
Right.
That's just what the aging has done to
it. Right. Well, that's what the barrel has done. But it also points up the importance of the quality of that base, of that Blanco. Because if you have great quality there, you're apt to have great quality.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that is just beautiful. Is about as smooth as a tequila can get, Jim Cedar. That is just gorgeous. Caramel is dessert. Little vanilla, little clove. It's just a little, I mean, even just a little bit of a toast
getting. And as you're saying, you sip this straight.
Yeah.
Don't contaminate it with a margarita. You know, don't lose the profile. I mean, that would be like taking a Bordeaux wine and saying, let's make sangria.
No, please.
You know? But it's the same thing. So these nuances are just phenomenal.
Well, we want to remind all of our fellow foodies and all of our listeners to go to Wine Inquirer with an I, wineinquirer.com, to find out all of what has been keeping Jim Cedar's palate busy. And also go over there and take a look at their very large and growing Facebook community, Twitter community. It's Wine Inquirer. You're going to see some videos. You're going to see some stories. This is just great. I love the fascinating world of tequila, and I love that you're one of the guys telling it.
Well, and actually, you know, people should take a look at that video that we just put up recently showing what the Jimadors go through in order to harvest these plants. It's a great video. It's very understandable, and I think you'll walk away really appreciating what goes into this spirit.
Right. Well, you know, there's a spirit that has come across Southern Arizona in the culinary world, the likes of which I have to say that I don't know that I've seen in a long time, because when people start talking about a restaurant, And it's like almost everywhere I go, it's like I'm being, it's like a surround sound of Dante's Fire cuisine and cocktails. I just had to get the executive chef into the studio to find out exactly what in the world people are buzzing about. And his name is Chef Ken Foy. Chef, welcome to On the Menu Live.
Thank you very much.
Now you got to come right up into that microphone, almost like you're eating it. Yeah, there it is. It's right there. But anyway, look, congratulations for your incredible success over what? How many hours have you been open?
About 90 days.
Okay, so you've been open for 3 months, and right away, you know that you're onto something when, I mean, all the foodies, all the bloggers, all the reporters, you know, your restaurant reviews, you guys are hitting it out of the park. What in the world is Dante's Fire, Chef?
It's the newest restaurant in Tucson. It's a place to be casual and social, meet your friends, have a wonderful dining experience in a comfortable atmosphere.
Right. And give everyone a sense of your location, because everybody knows the space.
Everybody knows the little A-frame on Grant. Grant and Tucson Boulevard.
Grant and Tucson Boulevard, right next, right near our good friends from Kingfisher. You know, an iconic landmark here. But yeah, so Dante's Fire. Where did this whole idea come up with? Because, you know, I have to say, we're going to break down this menu and get to the heart of the story, Ken Foy. But when you're coming up with this new restaurant concept, how did you get to Dante's Fire?
The name evolved. We really wanted fire and ice, but on Grant Road, there's fire and spice. We couldn't do that. That was just too close. My partner's more of the literary mind, so we kept the fire. We added the Dante's part of it, and it kind of tied the whole theme together.
Right, right. And so what about your own sort of culinary background, your journey sort of contributed to getting you to the point where you're putting this menu together? Talk a little bit about maybe some of your influences as a chef and how those have all come together to manifest in, I think, one of the most creative menus in town.
Influences, I like fresh. I like what's available. I like what's around, what's being showcased by my purveyors and at the markets at the time.
Right.
You take care of the ingredients and the menu will pretty much write itself. That's one of the philosophies we have in the kitchens there. Get what's fresh, get what's wonderful, and don't get in the way.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I couldn't think of any better way to say it. And the fact that you've given as much attention to the cocktail world as you do the culinary world. So you're looking at this menu, and it's, you know, quite simply, it's a two-sided menu. One side, you've got food, and the other side, you've got cocktails, and they're exactly the same length. So, I mean, you put as much attention on the bar side as you do the food side, and we're going to talk a little bit about all of that. But why is the cocktail experience so fundamental to Dante's Fire when you go in there for getting a good bite?
Well, it's fundamental in the business organization as a whole. There's two of us, one in the kitchen, myself, and one who's an excellent bartender who takes care of the front of the house. The cocktail creations are all of his own. I had input on one of them, which isn't even on the menu here. That's got a cucumber foam on it. Everything else is entirely his, and it's the marriage of the front of the house and the back house.
I should remind our fellow foodies that if you want to learn a little bit more about this cucumber foam, which I think adorns a cucumber martini, I actually wrote a column about what Ken Foy is doing with foam a couple of weeks ago in Inside Tucson Business. So go on to azbiz.com a couple of weeks ago and find out what Foy is doing with foam, and you're going to get a sense of exactly how in the world you can put cucumber foam on top of a beverage. All right, so Chef, let's break this down. So you made it easy for us. You have very convenient categories for your dishes and mm-hmm. for your cocktails. Would you kindly, sir, walk us through the categories on your menu?
All right. The first one is limbo. That was everything that we wanted to offer on the menu that didn't fit into the structure of the other categories. That's kind of our catch-all. We've got our salads and some of our lighter starting dishes there. Next is greed. Everything's got a little bit of decadence, a little bit of, losing my adjective here.
I think it's almost like an indulgence. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, for example, you want to talk about the foie pops there, Chef?
The foie pops is, the one that's getting all the press right now. I picked this up a couple of years ago and we've been playing with it and playing with it. And about 8 months ago, I think I got it finally down to where it was, it's grown outside the recipe. So it's just foie gras pureed, folded in a little bit of truffles, chives, a little bit of sauterne wine, and then it's cured with a little bit of vanilla-infused sugar, some kosher salt, and it's just let to rest there. And then you bring it out, form it into the lollipop shape, put a toothpick in it, and it's about the finest amuse you've ever had in your life.
Oh, my goodness. And I think it would pair beautifully with an extra añejo and tequila.
You're already thinking ahead here, aren't you?
So you've got these great starters for the limbo. You got these wonderful creative dishes there under greed. Mm-hmm. What have you saved for the anger part
anger,
of your menu?
Everything in there's got a little bit of spice. You got your Thai curry shrimp that's got some chili puree in it. The oyster shooters, which have a horseradish gazpacho. The tuna tartare that's got a little bit of cayenne in the dressing for the tuna. The shrimp martini with a beautiful tomato vodka vinaigrette. It's a different kind of spice, more of a spirit spice than a heat spice. And the pepper Parpadel Diablo is just the most silky smooth Cajun cream sauce you've ever had in your life.
I mean, I think I just want to do one of each as I'm working down. Jim knows that's how I roll. I wouldn't want to leave anything out, Chef Ken Foy.
That's part and parcel of the concept. Everything's small plates. Everything's meant to be shared. The most expensive thing on the menu is $16, and that's foie gras.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so you guys, a very smart move on your part, because you've done it in a way to give everyone a sense of, let's come in with a big group of people, just start ordering, you know, tons of small plates, give your sense a clear sense of the variety of the textures and the flavors and such. But then we hit upon this category called treachery. What's up with that?
That is desserts. That is pack on the calories, enjoy the ride, have some fun. That's the last of our sins.
Last of our sins. So we got limbo, greed, anger, and treachery. And we're going to do a little tasting right now to get a sense of what all the buzz is about. Then if we have a little time, we'll talk about the cocktail side of the menu, which is lust, heresy, and fraud. I mean, how much fun can one person have, Jim Cedar?
You know what, Ken? I think if the most expensive item on the menu is about $16, I could see Matt renting out some space in the corner of the restaurant and never leaving.
We've got the private dining room in the back. He's more than welcome to spend as much time there as he needs.
Bring a stack of 20s and spend a few hours. Good.
Hey, Ken, you know, sort of similar to, you know, almost any industry, what does it take from beginning to end to launch a restaurant? I mean, kind of similar, whether it be tequila, whether it be wine. I mean, people, you know, consumers only see the end result. They taste the tequila, they taste the wines, don't know what goes on underneath. The restaurant industry, from my understanding, is a really competitive, very difficult industry. How long did it take you from beginning to end to launch the concept?
Ironically, yes, it takes a lot of work. We did this on one of the fastest scales I've ever seen. Hmm. We were 45 days in the building to open.
That's unbelievable.
But how long in terms of creating the concept?
The concept took about 15 years.
Here you go.
Since he was in second grade. So anyway, what did you not reference 12 to try?
All right, so our first greet at the restaurant is our bread service. We're immensely proud of it. It's how we introduce ourselves to the guests. So I brought a little bit of that to share.
Great, let's try it.
All right, it is a pretzel stout bread. This stuff takes 36 hours from flour to bread. It is made with molasses, Guinness beer, a little bit of honey, flour, and yeast. And then it's coated with a pretzel salt and baked in a hearth.
A real hearth. Okay, so what I don't want to do is put anything on this. I mean, it's almost like with the lime and the tequila, the beautiful, rich aroma of that bread, the different textures, you got a beautiful crust, yet it's very pillowy and soft inside. The color is just a gorgeous, like, almost a saffron color. The salt on the edge. I mean, the last thing I want to do, I think, is spread butter on this. Am I right?
It's good just like it is, and it can be added to.
Oh, that's just gorgeous.
Every once in a while,
it's velvety smooth.
Every once in a while at late night for happy hour, we do what we call a sexy sandwich. And we feature one of those breads, and it's a couple shaved salamis, or supersadas, roasted pepper, vinaigrette, and it's just
very
just
nice.
The balance seems to work.
And you know what would pair beautifully with this bread? The extra añejo tequila from Anadua.
Well, look what I happen to have right in front of me, Matt.
Okay, well done, Chef. And I love to say the way that you say the first thing that we greet our guests with. I mean, that's part of the experience. You're greeted by food, and I just love that.
Thank you.
So where are we going next?
We're going to Foie Bob Land.
I'm so happy you brought the foie. I mean, I, I prayed. Actually, I sat last night and prayed that you were bringing in the foie, because this is, like you said, this is what's got the attention of the foodie community in town, Chef.
You know, I love it when a restaurateur comes in stocked with a cooler. You know, that's always a really good sign
that's
for
right.
me.
It's a food and, show, isn't
there
it?
You go.
And it's not full of bait and beer.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
So what do you have here?
All right. So these are the foie pops. We have, come here, microphone. We have sauterne poached apples. With a little hint of vanilla to them, and then we've made more or less a torchon of foie gras.
A torchon, he says, Jim.
Yeah, which is more or less cured.
Right.
So
right.
Nothing's been cooked. It hasn't been seared. It's not the traditional presentation, but it's divine on its own right.
Oh, and the aroma is divine. Now, is there a way that we do this justice? I mean, because I've never had a foie pop. So
not many people have.
How do we begin to approach the process here, Chef?
There is no process. It's food. There's no rules. You do what feels comfortable.
Matt, since when do you need somebody to tell you to put it in your mouth?
I guess that's what I'm doing. All right, I'm going in.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, there it is. Wow. And therein lies what everyone is
creamy,
talking about.
Creamy.
Rich.
Wow.
It's a mouthfeel. Mm. Velvet cream. The textures. Really? Foie pops at Dante's Fire. That needs to be required eating on anyone's
wow.
menu. All right, we got about a minute before we do our trivia questions, so we're going to, you brought out another little delicacy here for us to try. What's up here?
Tuna tartare.
Did you get a foie pop, Casey?
I did.
Okay. Good.
I did.
You're not getting this. This is
right.
My
Nobody should be left out of this.
No, I am included. Thank you.
Okay, tuna tartare.
That's right.
Okay, talk about this.
All right, tuna, minced ahi tuna. Cayenne pepper, soy sauce, sugar, scallions, toasted sesame seeds. We take it away that I hadn't seen before, but I think it adds a lot to it, with a candied lemon zest, garnish, which adds just a little bit of tart and sweet to it at the same time.
It sounds perfect.
You know, you don't have the advantage of this, but I'm sitting next to him, and as he's spooning this out, these Asian sort of soy, ginger aromas are kind of floating my way.
Yeah, well, you got the guest celebrity. You're a celebrity, Jim Cedar. You're in the celebrity seat. Anyway, absolutely beautiful. And I love the intention on plating. So, folks, he literally is. He's plating these up right here live, like he's on the line at work. And he's doing it in a way that shows how deeply he cares about the culinary arts. And when you are talking about Dante's Fire, you want to talk, this is really an exceptional culinary experience, but as Chef says, it's no rules. So you come in there, you know, you're going to have an amazingly new and fresh culinary experience, and it's done with intention, and it's done with professionalism. So
what are your hours of the restaurant?
The hours of the restaurant are 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. daily. Something I really want to point out to those listening, the kitchen is open until 2 a.m.
Every day.
We're closed Tuesday.
Closed Tuesday, that's right. But every day other than Tuesday, kitchen's open.
Full kitchen till 2 a.m.
Full menu.
It's one of the only places I know of. There might be some other out there that you can get quality food after 10 p.m.
And it's not just a three-item happy hour
it's
menu.
It's not buffalo wings, chicken tenders, and whatever else.
All right, we want to do a little tasting right after we do our trivia question, but you have brought a gift card to the station, and you want to provide the opportunity to send one of our listeners over to Dante's Fire for the first time, perhaps, perhaps not. If you, listener, know the answer to this question, I think this is a fun one. So we're all familiar with Dante's Inferno. We want to know how many rings are there in Dante's Inferno. You have to think back now. How many rings are there in Dante's Inferno? If you think you know the answer to the question, give us a call right here, right now at 880-5678. That's 880-KNST for a chance to win a Dante's Fire gift card. Good luck. We'll be right back.
Do you realize how many fantastic restaurants are in Tucson? He's your cheat sheet. On the Menu with Matt Russell is on KNST.
And welcome back to On the Menu Live. It's Matt Russell.
Swallow that food.
With a mouthful of ahi, of tuna tartare. I mean, folks, you have to get yourself over to Dante's Fire, not only to meet Ken Foy for yourself, but to get a sense of what this entire story is all about. We had some wonderfully hearth-baked bread. We had these great foie pops, the likes of which I said I've never seen before. And then this beautiful, cool, crisp, refreshing, perfect for the summertime, kind of tuna tartare on this gorgeous chip. I mean, this is just really good stuff. And Jim Cedar, I mean, you have done a good job polishing yours off.
Oh, well, you know, somebody has to do the hard work.